This is Yonder. Hi, everyone. Jeff Robbins back with the Yonder podcast. This is episode number 43. On each episode of the Yonder podcast, we talk to company leaders and big thinkers about how to make remote work work. We're focused on expanding the remote work job market and helping listeners to understand how to improve productivity, retention, trust, respect, and happiness for themselves and for their teams. This week, we've got a really great interview. We're talking to Dr. Laura Hambley, who is the president of Work Evolution, which is work, EVOHLUTION.com on the internet. Laura is a psychologist and co-author of a book called Growing the Virtual Workplace, and runs, as I mentioned, Work Evolution, which is a company that does research, assessment, and consulting around remote work, and they're based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And there's lots of great stuff on this podcast. We get into all kinds of, Laura and her team have done all sorts of research over the years. We get into 11 traits of a successful remote worker and 12 attributes which leaders of remote teams must possess. And then 6 buildable skills that remote leaders can learn. And it's good stuff and great pivot points for deeper conversation. And I think you're going to like it. But first, if you're not already receiving the Yonder newsletter, you should go and sign up for that now. Yonder.io/newsletter is where you can sign up for that. And we're sending it out every other week, and it's chock full of information that we've posted on the Yonder website, but also about the podcast, and then just other stuff that we're finding around the web and social and links and stuff like that, so that you can kind of keep up on the latest thinking about remote work and managing remote teams, all that kind of stuff. And of course, if you're not subscribed to this podcast, you can do that through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. If you visit yonder.io, there's a link in the upper right-hand corner to find links to that and everything else you might like. And we love it when you listen. So, all right. Well, let's get to our interview with Dr. Laura Hambley. Dr. Laura, welcome to the Yonder podcast.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Yeah, it's great. I will usually start this podcast. We talk to people all over the world. Where are you talking to us from?
I'm in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and I have a view of the Rocky Mountains from here, which are still covered in snow.
Nice. Yes. Well, starting to see little buds on the trees. Perhaps the winter will be over soon. But here in New England, where I live, it's been just mostly cold. So let's see. Introduce yourself to people. Tell us what you do.
Sure. So I am an industrial organizational psychologist. So I have my doctorate in that area of psychology, which is psychology applied to workplaces. So I am also a serial entrepreneur. So I currently run 3 different practices in psychology. One of them's in my city, one of them's in my country in Canada, based in Toronto. And the third is a global company, which is the one that we're going to talk about today, Work Evolution, which we founded 4 years ago. And it specializes in the human elements of remote work and distributed teams. So really excited to be here. I'm a mother of 3 kids, 12, 10, and 7. And I work remotely myself at least a couple of days a week. But because I run a psychology practice, I do have physical office space in my city, and I try to go there 3 days a week when I can. And what else? I write psychological thrillers on the side.
Wow. So you're a practicing psychologist. You see patients as well as all this more philosophical and entrepreneurial stuff that you do?
Well, we don't call them patients. We call them clients.
Sorry. Clients?
It's okay. Right. So yeah, there's different areas of our field, right? There's clinical and counseling psychology, but my
right.
area is more workplace and career. So I oversee a team of psychologists that sees clients. And I do see some clients, but I get more involved in the corporate projects that we do to help organizations, help teams, leaders, and cultures be more effective.
Yeah. Well, this is great. This is great. So your background is a little bit more academic. You've been a professor and you're a psychologist as well. How did you end up starting Work Evolution?
Yeah, sure. So when I did my PhD back in 2002, I had been working myself for a few years. After I got my master's, I was just tired of being in university. I needed a little bit of the real world. So I worked for 3 years. And funny enough, I got involved in distributed teams myself. So I worked for a company that was based in New York, and we had an office in Toronto and an office in Calgary. And I helped grow a team, and it was in the rage of the dot-coms, and it was on a career development.com where we created career assessments to help match people to careers and education they were passionate about. So I had done that. So when I started my PhD, I wanted to choose a topic that was cutting edge at that time, because I always like to be on the innovative side of things. So I decided that leading remote teams was a cutting edge topic. It wasn't really tackled very much in the scientific literature, and it was a project I could really dig into and be passionate about. And I always thought, hey, it'd be neat to publish books and become a consultant on that. I didn't want to go down an academic career path, but I love teaching and I love being involved in research as long as it's practically applicable to help the real world. So I started the topic of leading from a distance, and I studied it in the lab and I studied it in the field. And that was between 2002 and 2005. And I met Tom O'Neill, who was one of my research assistants, and we started publishing around distributed teams back then, and then got out of the university, but stayed connected. So over the years, we kept on digging into it. In 2006, I co-authored a book called Growing the Virtual Workplace with 3 business school professors. And in that project, we were really trying to support the widespread adoption of telework. And we were looking at the human side of it. And Tom and I, at that time, we said, why is it that some people struggle with remote work and other people really embrace it? So we started to collect data on the personality profile of a remote worker. And over many years of publishing and digging into research, we decided that we had some really tangible, exciting learnings and data, and we decided to launch Work Evolution 4 years ago to get this into the world.
Well, I have so many questions. So first of all, you're preaching to the choir some. This is also the stuff that I get excited about. But let's make sure that we're explaining things in a way that people that are perhaps less familiar on board, you know, on ramping onto this topic can keep up with. But goodness. I'm just going to start with sort of my top question here. And maybe we'll sort of work backwards to some more basic kind of stuff. But have you found? What is there a personality type of remote workers? Is there something that we all should be looking for in remote workers? Or are there sort of, personality and sort of, I'm hesitant to call them psychological aspects, but I mean, we're talking about the ways that people interact and think, aptitudes.
No, absolutely. We call, when it comes to personality fit with remote or distributed work, we call them traits or attributes when we look at personality. And we have the distributed work profiler, which is essentially what are the attributes of someone who is a strong fit, a moderate fit, or a cautionary fit with working remotely. And we're huge fans of this movement. We think it's not going away, despite some organizations that get into the press saying we're pulling everyone back to the office. And we think, what are you doing? Yeah. That's like, so backwards, right? It's so backwards. and it's the cardinal sin in workplace psychology. You don't give someone something like a perk or a benefit, like flexibility, and then take it away, right? You might as well not give it in the first place if you're going to take it away. It's just, it kills culture. Yeah. It kills human motivation. But anyway, back to the traits, we put a lot of people, hundreds and hundreds and now thousands, through this assessment. And in our research, we found that 11 traits were predictive of remote work success. And our view is if people understand where they are in these traits, they can put into place, supports and structures to be at their best and to decide the ideal balance between working in a traditional workplace or maybe a co-working center or wherever they need to be and working completely remote from other people, right? Everyone has their ideal balance of when and where they ideally get work done and are at their best.
Sure. So what are the 11 traits?
What are the 11? You want to hear all 11?
I want to kind of dig in and allow the listeners to sort of understand, you know, what they should be looking for when hiring remote workers, or, you know, if they are remote workers, what aspects of themselves are advantages or might be disadvantages in working remotely?
Sure. So
we could talk in more generalities if that's easier for you.
It's fine. Agreeableness, so being cooperative and trusting, is key. Desire for novelty, being open to new experiences and new ways of getting things done. Diligence, so following through on your commitments and persisting. Emotional control, so being calm, composed, and relaxed and not easily flying off the handle. Impulse control, so resisting the temptations around you, not a surprise. Locus of control, which is believing that you have some control and effort will pay off in how you get work done. Need for autonomy, so preferring independence and making your own decisions about how you get work done, which isn't a surprise. Optimists tend to do better, so being positive and having a positive outlook tends to work better for remote work. Task confidence, being confident and assured because you don't have people around you all the time to support. You need to be more confident in getting your work done. Quick starting, so being able to dive into tasks and not procrastinate. And introversion, so funny enough, not a surprise, preferring working alone and your quiet and alone time tends to work better for purely remote work. So there you go. That's the 11.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting. You know, all of these things have sort of come up on the podcast in the past, but we've never really collected them into a concise list like this. That's amazing. Let's go through some of these. Introversion is one that comes up a lot here. I guess they sort of all play in together. So it's, you know, it's not like if someone is an extrovert, they're necessarily not going to be a good remote worker if they also, you know, carry a lot of these other traits. But it's interesting. That one has been one that we've sort of been keeping an eye on. It's like, is remote work only for introverts?
No. Yeah. It's the balance, right? And I think telework especially got hit hard because it was treated as an all or nothing phenomenon, right? But most, through all of our research over the last 15 years, most people can work remotely some of the time and do so very well and be very happy. Okay.
Right.
Less people can do it 100%, 100% remote. That's less people, but definitely people can do that and do that all the time. And then there's also the minority that really struggle, right? And they're the ones that just say, oh, I could never do that. How do you do that? I could never do that, right? So we're really good at pegging where they are on that continuum, not to be gatekeepers for it, because if I had to feed my family and work remotely 100% of the time, I would do it. I would just need more supports in place. I'm a high extrovert, for example. I would need lots of supports to make sure that I'm getting that social connectivity through the use of different technologies and getting out there in my community, etc. Otherwise, I would go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I mean, you know, I ran a distributed company for over 10 years and it was, you know, super rewarding, but I'm also very verbal. I like brainstorming with people. And so, you know, we did a lot of audio and video conferencing to sort of meet those needs. And I think that there's oftentimes a misunderstanding by people that don't quite have their head around the world of distributed work that it's all about isolation and kind of these quiet, super introverted, not very social kind of people that are doing this work. But, you know, we've got all these tools in place for, you know, a wide variety of expression, whatever people need. So, but again, you know, I think that there's that sort of stereotype of the social difficulty introvert who's the remote worker. And I've actually found that, you know, a lot of the other things on this list add up to, you know, things like optimism, autonomy, the locus of control, impulse control, emotional control, are, you know, more about a certain amount of self-confidence, ability to communicate well, express oneself, know oneself, a lot of those kinds of things, which are generally good characters in all employees, but are something that's that much more required in a remote work environment. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're bang on. And then what we're really fond of in our assessments, and we have more than this assessment, of course, but when it comes to employees, we like to give them tangible advice that they can apply immediately to become better distributed workers. So given my personality profile, what is it that I can do to be productive, engaged, happy, have good work-life balance, all those different things? What is it that I can do immediately? And that's what we focus on is an action plan.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another really important part of it. It is, Lullabot at least, you know, we sort of gave people a couple of months or expected that they were going to take a couple of months if they hadn't been a remote worker before to kind of adjust in and kind of find their flow, find their balance. But a lot of these metrics, these, you know, traits are also good indicators of how people will find their flow. Right. And, you know, I mean, again, this is psychology is, you know, helping people to find their points of happiness and effectiveness and flow.
Exactly. Yeah. Bang on.
And, you know, I think remote work environment offers that much more, you know, the ability of people to have the autonomy to find that. Whereas co-located environment, it's a little bit more about kind of fitting in and just getting the work done. So tell me about other research that you've done. What else have you found? I mean, what are the things that might be surprising or epiphanies for listeners of the podcast?
Yeah, sure. So when we launched Work Evolution, we had this profiler of a remote worker, right? And it was the first profile in the world to look at what's the holy grail of personality profiling for remote workers. And that was the first one we said, okay, this one's really exciting. We're excited to get this out here to organizations. But as we talked to more and more organizations, they loved that. They love the tool and it works very well. But what they kept saying was it's the managers who are struggling most with this. They're the resistors. So we said, well, why don't we turn the table and look at them and understand what are their attributes and what are their skills when it comes to leading a remote team? And if we can assess them, we can help to groom them into more effective distributed or remote leaders. So we took our research. Sure. Yeah. And I said I had done my PhD on this. So we had done research earlier on. And then we said, let's update this research because the world has changed so much since 2005, right? So we interviewed actually 34 leaders of distributed teams, of high performing distributed teams from enterprises in North America and Europe. And we had 680 unique behaviors that came out of that. 680. So there's a lot of things these leaders were doing to help lead and inspire and engage remote workers. And then we developed a framework called the Distributed Leader Capability Model. And it was all the capabilities you need to be a strong distributed leader and what you need to do to make those capabilities a success. And we found we put a whole bunch of attributes and skills through our testing. And my co-founder, Dr. Tom O'Neill, he's a world-renowned professor when it comes to this sort of stuff, to personality and team dynamics. So he crunched all the numbers and we found that it was 12 attributes for leaders and 6 areas of skills that helped them to be really effective remote team leaders. So we developed an assessment around this where we go in and assess leaders and help really understand where they're at and develop them. And it tends to turn them around, right? So the ones who are very skeptical of the remote workplace movement, if we're able to do a debrief of this type of assessment, we can typically get them excited and get them focused on their own development versus fearful of it.
Yeah. Wow. This is great. Because this is the hook, right? This is especially... you know, we're seeing more and more companies that are starting up, fully distributed from the get-go. It's kind of in their DNA. And that's relatively easy. You've got a kind of an even playing field. Everyone's sort of figuring it out together. There's sort of this grand experiment going on, and everyone's in it together. But it's oftentimes the companies, the existing companies that are transitioning or expanding through using remote workers where a lot of the sort of stuff that they fall back on, those practices that they fall back on, are just not working. You know, in the office, a manager can have that sort of calm feeling of everything's in control because people are sitting at their desks. They can look and see. And oftentimes I'll get this question from leaders of co-located teams, how do you know that your remote workers are working? How do you know that they're not taking advantage and cheating and so this issue of trust comes up a lot. I mean, it's a different way of thinking and managing. What have you found those differences are? What are the things that get co-located managers excited? What are those things that they need to know?
Yeah, so we're totally on the same page there. Trust is a big one, right? And some of us are naturally predisposed to trust and others are more predisposed to distrust, right? It's how we're wired.
Sure.
And that's one of the 12 attributes. So I'm glad you brought that up, Jeff. So we're able to assess a leader on their degree of trust. And that's one of the predictors of success as a remote leader. So say that you're cautionary on trusting, you're not very trusting. It doesn't mean you can't do it. It means that you're going to have to be aware of that and you're going to have to put some practices into place that can help counteract that, right? And it'll be hard work, but it's like anything. It takes hard work to do a good job at being a leader. And leadership is difficult. So I run the Leadership Success Group here in Canada, and the Leadership Success Group is all around the success of managers, leaders, and teams. And it's hard work. And then you put a distributed workplace on top of it, it's even harder. So we know it's harder, but it takes more intentionality, and it takes certain practices, and we know the best practices. We're keen and excited that leaders understand what they can do to be more effective.
Yeah. Yeah. I've said that remote work is ankle weights for management. it's more difficult at first, but you're building stronger muscles. And in the long run, these are better practices just in general. What are some of the other attributes, leaders need to be aware of?
So leaders who are adaptable tend to do better at remote leadership. So they have that flexibility and adaptability in the face of unexpected events, right?
Right. And oftentimes the remote work is the unexpected event.
Oh, exactly.
Right. And so it's a difficult transition for those people who are not adaptable, who are kind of, especially in large corporate environments, where it's more about going by the book, sort of following the systems and practices, knowing what those are, people are going to be a little bit less adaptable.
Exactly. Yeah. And what else here? Empathy and gratitude. I say those together. They're two different traits, but showing empathy from a distance, it takes more effort, right? And being concerned and caring about how your people are doing, because you don't have the luxury of just walking down the hall and running into them and asking, right? So you have to go the extra mile there.
And a lot of that can't be, oftentimes empathy and gratitude is relayed through nonverbal cues. In offices, it's a high five or a, "Hey, Bob, how's it going?" Kind of a thing where the leaders, managers can feel like they're showing empathy and gratitude, but sometimes the employees aren't actually getting that. So while it's that much more difficult to relay those kinds of things in a virtual environment where you have to send an email or set up a phone call or video call or whatever, I think it is much more powerful when you're that much more proactive about it.
Exactly. Right? And putting into place different tools to do that, right? So there's a lot of employee recognition platforms in the cloud, right? That allow you to recognize and thank.
Sure.
And, I mean, I have a small business. I have about 15 people that work for me here, but, even me as a small business, we can reward people virtually. We can give them gift cards. We can give them kudos. We can do all of that if we're planful about it, which brings me to another attribute, which is being planful. Okay. So you can't just get away with what I call lazy leadership, which is saying my door is always open, right? I think you need to virtually walk the hall. You need to plan to connect with your people. You need to plan your check-ins, your touch points, your drive-bys. We like to call them drive-bys in our company. Sure. But you need to be planful. And if you're not naturally planful, then you better put things into place to help you be more planful, or you're not going to do well at this.
Yeah. Yeah. And here again, I think, being in a remote environment where if you're not planning these interactions, they straight up won't happen. There's not that sort of organic, more chaotic kind of environment that you might find in a co-located office where you feel like you've had touch points with everyone, but you haven't necessarily.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's just what we're used to, right? But it's not necessarily the best and the only way.
Well, and even in the co-located environment, those things tend to happen a little bit more, this is not, it's the squeaky wheels, right? It's the people who are willing, who come to your office, who are more proactive themselves in communicating. Whereas the people that may be a little bit more introverted may fall into the background and not get those touch points. And again, if you're planning it, you're trying to be more completist. You can make sure that everybody's included.
Exactly. Yeah. No, totally. We're on the same page. And in addition to those attributes, I mean, I didn't go over all 12, but there's some really interesting ones in there. There's also 6 areas of skills. And we like to assess leaders on these skills because they're predictive of how well the leader will do. And it's slightly easier to develop skills than it is attributes, right? Personality attributes are tougher to change. Can they be changed? Well, I mean, they can be tweaked, but you manage around them. You develop strategies to manage around your personality, okay? But when it comes to skills, mm-hmm. you can actually develop the skills. So we have 6 areas. We have communication medium match, which is about the leader choosing the right communication media or technology for their purpose. Okay, so knowing when to do a face-to-face, a video conference, a phone call, an email, a Yammer, a Slack, I mean, whatever it is that you're communicating through, when to use it for what.
I love that. I feel like you could build a whole consulting company just around that. Right? It's just the number of times, you know, you get this a super long email where it's just so not a fluid way of communicating. There's not, you know, you can't brainstorm through email, right? Or conversely, you know, text messages, which is sort of quicker, starts to get too informational, or, you know, you set up a phone call for something that really, you know, it needs to be more archival and you need to be able to refer back to it. The knowing how to match the communications medium to the message is a really
exactly.
Big skill.
So we assess leaders on that, and we assess them on their meeting management. And meeting management is so key across a whole number of leadership capabilities, right? It's a basic, important, foundational set of skills, but a lot of leaders don't get trained in it properly. And I would say, you know, billions of dollars are wasted on meetings that maybe are too long, are too mismanaged, or there's not clear outcomes out of. And then when you do it in a distributed or remote environment, it's even more of a struggle. You need to be totally on the ball with making sure the meetings are needed, effective, the technology's the right technology, etc.
Do you think that there's a difference between co-located meetings and remote meetings in terms of the content or the way the meetings are managed?
Oh, yeah, Jeff, for sure. I mean, there's just different meeting etiquette. There's different, I mean, technologies are used. Absolutely. And I think I always tell our clients, you need to have a plan B for every remote meeting. What if the internet's down? What's plan B? Right. And you need to have plan B right. set up ahead. And you need to be really clear on everyone needs to start the meeting on time, which means you should be there 5 minutes early, right? And our advisor of our board, he used to be a senior vice president at Plantronics, the headset company, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm
aware of. I'm a fan of your product.
And they used to, I mean, and on their website, plantronics.com, they have a whole section on effective meetings because they've really mastered that art. And they have a meeting calculator for your meetings in terms of how much each meeting is costing you. So you can put in everyone's salary, the frequency. I know it's so great. The frequency of the meeting, number of people in it, the average salary, and it'll say this meeting is costing you $35,000 a year. Right? And if the meeting goes 10 minutes over on average, what that costs a year. And you start to say, wow, this is a huge cost and time commitment. And our advisor, Philip, he says, if there's not an agenda in advance with any pre-work, because a lot of time there should be pre-work for meetings in order to make the best use of the time. You shouldn't be seeing things for the first time in the meeting because then you're taking the time to digest them, right? And more introverted people want to have more time to think through it. They don't want to be talking through it. So if they don't get things in advance and there's no agenda, he'll cancel the meeting. He'll say, I'm not being part of this meeting. It's not organized, right? It's a waste of my time. I think that's an important one for distributed leaders is you got to make the most of these meetings.
Yeah, I guess so. I also see the purpose of these meetings is to sort of, there's a cultural purpose, there's a connectivity purpose. And so I usually try to build in some non-purposeful time into them. You know, it can just be at the top, just saying like, hey, how's everyone doing? Or even as we did at the top of this podcast, you know, like, how's the weather there? Here's what's going on with the weather here. I think it allows us to understand each other a little bit better. And it's stuff that oftentimes when I read it, books about meetings, and there are entire books about meetings out there, you know, they talk about like, you know, keeping them super, super purposeful. But I find that in a remote environment, having, you know, allowing for a little bit looser kind of thing is good. But of course, if you're running the salary calculators, you will probably try to keep your meetings as brief as possible. I tend to see it as part of the overhead of running a distributed company.
No, I agree. No, so I mentioned all of this because there's a whole productivity element, but there's also the human side, and you got to make people feel the personalization of it. So I agree 100%. You should go around and find out how everyone's doing, how their weekend was. What's one unique thing about your city that's happening right now? Right? Like my city was a winter wonderland yesterday. It looked like Christmas. The good thing is the snow melts quickly at this time of year, but it was literally a winter wonderland. And just talking about what your city is like, it just adds that personal touch. And I also think sometimes you should have team huddles to celebrate things. And we won a proposal, an RFP a couple of weeks ago, and we had a virtual toast where we all got on video and toasted the success of it. And that was really fun. And there was no purpose other than to toast and celebrate it. Yeah. Right. So I'm with you, Jeff. I think that's absolutely critical. It's not all about work. It's about the culture and the human relationships.
Yeah. And finding ways to celebrate is that much more of a challenge, but can be that much more rewarding when it is a planful experience, when it's actually, you know, more proactive. The leaders are more clear about what we're celebrating, why we're celebrating, because it's easy to kind of roll in celebration of the finishing of a project into the Friday afternoon have a beer in the kitchen thing that happens once a month, you know, and again that messaging gets confused. You know, it doesn't quite feel like the same amount of celebration. One of the things we did at Lullabot was on people's birthdays, we would, I'm sure this is still happening at Lullabot, on people's birthdays, we would do a Google search for birthday cake and then the name of the person, birthday cake Bob. And inevitably you would come up with a picture of a birthday cake that says Bob on it. And then we would post it to Slack or Yammer, depending on sort of the evolution of the company. And, you know, happy birthday, Bob. And I'll tell you, being Bob, it feels pretty much just as good as actually getting an actual cake. There's something about it, just the sort of the psychological, just like, hey, it's a cake with my name on it. It goes back to deep childhood stuff, I'm sure.
Absolutely, right? It goes down to the basic human needs of attention, affection, and appreciation. I like to remember the three A's, right? People need attention, appreciation, and affection, right? So you can give it to them from a distance too, right? And they eat that up. They eat up the appreciation. And not everyone wants a lot of attention in front of a crowd, or, you know, they might be more humble or shy. But as a leader, you need to figure out what each person needs and deliver. And we really talk about that in our leadership assessments, right? It's being a versatile communicator means understanding what Jeff might want is different than what Steve might want. Right.
Yeah. What are some of the other skills that, that leaders should be thinking about developing?
Okay. So, another one of them is, being a good time zone manager. So Being aware of the different time zones of your team. And I like the term share the pain. So if I have to start really early one day, maybe my teammate has to stay later the next day. So Tom, my business partner, he's in Portugal right now. So he's 7 hours ahead, right? So either we have to start early or he has to stay a bit later to have our team meetings. And we just share the pain that way. And we're aware of the time zones and, you know, respectful of time zone differences.
Yeah, it's an empathy practice. Yep. Absolutely. And also something for people to realize when they're hiring people in far-flung time zones of exactly what they're asking, which then comes down to this issue of asynchronous communication versus synchronous, more real-time communication, and how important that is at your company and what that means and how it plays into, again, we're talking about communication medium matching again, you know, here. Yeah.
Thank you. And then another one, and this sounds so obvious to someone. I mean, you were the creator of some of the first websites in the world. I read on your site. I was, you know, amazed and honored to be talking to you. You're wow, what a guru.
I've been doing all of this a long time. I've been doing a lot of things a long time, but
you still sound full of energy. So that's a good thing. tech savvy, right? And we take that one for granted, but I think it's, I mean, a lot of us are more tech savvy than we've ever been. However, we have less time than we've ever had. So what happens is a new technology will be launched or a new platform and we don't take the time to be adequately trained in it, and then we're thrown on it and then we're not using all the bells and whistles properly. So I think we got to just be careful to take that time, because it's going to save us time if we understand all the features of Zoom or Slack, and that we're using it to its fullest potential and not just, you know, trial and error and half using it.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a leader, understanding the tools and what they offer and what they're good at and what they're not, you know, taking the time that the team, your staff might not have. I would add to that also, and I'm maybe you're covering this somewhere else because you've got all these wonderful points that keep coming up. But we've talked about tools overflow. It's easy to add on. Oh, there's another video. We've got another video solution that's really good at screen sharing, but this one's good at talking heads. If you want to, you know, talk to the other people with your camera, use this. But if you want to text them, use the, you know, and you end up with 18 different tools and, you know, the, again, communication medium matching, it becomes that much more of a challenge when you're kind of rolling the dice. There's, you know, 18 different tools and six of them do video chat. Which one do we choose? That can be really overwhelming for everyone. But it can be easy for that to kind of creep up at distributed companies.
Yeah, so being very intentional and piloting a new tool and just making sure that you're using it right and being okay with saying, we'll try this for a month, but if it's not working, we'll ditch it, right? But we're going to be intentional about that. We're going to actually have a pilot time frame where everyone's going to give it their utmost to try and make it work.
Yeah. And then being a little bit ruthless, because inevitably there will be a few people at the company that really love the new tool, but it's kind of not working for everyone, or it doesn't quite fit into the overall philosophy or strategy, communication strategy.
Absolutely.
For the company.
Yeah.
Any more skills? I've got four here so far. Two more skills.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I'll give them all away. I know.
Well, they're
great
talking points.
I'm happy to.
Everyone should absolutely and definitely contact you. Work Evolution, evolution.com, and hire you to consult for them, because you're obviously a wellspring of information about all of this and can help.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know, thank you. And it's funny because over the last 15 years, we've been, I think, ahead of our time in some ways, because this stuff takes a while to catch on to the mainstream. So we feel absolutely. Like, oh man, we've been ahead of our time. And, you know, where is the world at with it? Is it going to reach a tipping point, or should we just not focus on this anymore? But now we found that it's reaching a tipping point, which is really exciting. And I think what was an aha moment for us was we presented at South by Southwest 2 years in a row, which is the Tech Innovation Entertainment Conference. I'm sure you've been a part of that over the years, Jeff.
In various different capacities, surprised. Yes. Yep.
But our session on leading from, so you're leading from a distance, now what, right? Question mark, exclamation mark. That was our title. It was full. And there were people from, you know, a lot of organizations like NASA, for example. And I mean, it just tells us that, wow, this topic isn't old news. It's actually still on the cutting edge, and it's something people want to hear about, learn about, apply to their organizations. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah.
We're excited about.
I feel like we're at this point of, there's a lot of tension that I see in the industry. The people, workers are very excited about it. If you put up a blog for digital nomads, it's going to be hugely popular because people want to figure out how to do that. They want to be that as workers. Whereas some of the stuff that you and I are doing, where we're trying to expand that workplace, we're kind of getting to the tipping point. The people that are doing it are excited about it. They want to evangelize it. They want to create a podcast like this one and tell everyone about how great it is and encourage companies to do it. But I'm still finding that the, you know, Fortune 500 companies, you know, we had Dell on the last podcast. There are some that are very forward thinking, but there's a lot of legacy thinking around this, and we're kind of waiting for that generational tipping point to happen, where there are enough workers that have grown up, being able to communicate and be productive with the technology that they carry on their body, and the idea of going into an office or sort of needing to adhere very closely to the 9-to-5 is kind
Totally. Because right now it's still fashion. The very most senior leaders are, you know, often in their 50s, 60s, right? And what's happening is an organization can achieve a lot of success with this. And we've seen this with some of our clients. They achieve a lot of success. Engagement increases, real estate cost savings are soaring, but then you get a new CEO or a new senior vice president of HR or talent. And then what happens is if they don't agree with it, the thing goes backwards, right? We've seen that in our own city. We've seen that with Yahoo, with IBM, with, you know, and we think it's because, you know, just a different way of thinking at the top and because the human elements aren't properly supported. So you have the right technology in place, but you don't have the right human practices around, especially the leaders and the teams. And how this impacts them and how to do it right from a people perspective.
Yeah. Well, and we just need to, you know, speaking with empathy here, these companies are, you know, have a practice that works, at least the way that they see it, it works. It's a known quantity. And to sort of throw that up in the air, not being quite sure if remote work would work for them, seems scary. But I think as people like you and me are able to shine a strong spotlight on companies like Dell or even, you know, small and mid-sized businesses that are really making this work, I think it becomes more obvious. It becomes a more well-worn path, and we're going to see more and more.
Exactly. So I didn't mean to, diverge from the question at hand. The two other skills, communication proficiency.
This is gold.
So clearly expressing your thoughts and ensuring messages are understood, no matter what medium you're working in, is communication proficiency. That's really important. And when I was perusing some of your stuff, I saw something about writing in one of the blog articles. And it's about, yeah, you need to be a great written communicator, but you also need to be a great verbal communicator over different communication technologies. And you need to be a great active listener, which I argue that about 80% of people aren't great active listeners. They're actually poor active listeners. So, and this is just as important when you're working from a distance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good stuff. I mean, and that it really is a skill. I think that sometimes people feel like they can't build, but you know, the more that you write, the better a writer you become, the more this that you speak, the better a speaker you become. You know, and I think for, you know, in the management hierarchy for, you know, company leaders, CEOs to encourage this type of behavior, expect this type of behavior, expect that this is a buildable skill, becomes sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. And I think kids need to be taught that, right? I mean, even absolutely. With my kids, it's ask an adult how their day was. So how often does a kid do that, right? How was your day, mom? And actually listen to the answer. If you can train kids to do that, they're going to be better active listeners as adults.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's good stuff. Yep. Love it.
And then the last one is organization, which is being efficient and organized and being able to establish and implement plans, right? And it comes back to, we talked about planning earlier on. It's that same sort of organization is a capability set. And it's something that some leaders really struggle with. And you might have a good EA and then thank goodness. But if you don't, then you need to be even more focused on how do I develop organization skills? How do I use tools to do so in my life as a leader? Because that's why I'm being paid to be a leader. I need to be organized. That's one of the expectations of me, right?
Yeah. Yep. These are all great skills for managers in general. I think if there's someone who's listening from a co-located company that has absolutely no plans to go remote, you should, if you find someone who used to be a successful manager at a distributed company, you should hire them immediately because they will very likely have most, if not all, of these skills. And you know, will be amazing. Of course, you won't be able to hire them because why would they want to go back and sit in an office all day?
Well, I think I've spoken to them. They find it tricky, right? I'm back in an office. It takes a lot of getting used to having to face that commute every day and go into the office. But they're the ones who are going to change organizations because they're going to say there's a better way of doing this.
That's true. That's a really good point. Wow. Yeah. Well, this is, man, I had hoped and expected that this was going to be a great conversation full of all sorts of wonderful morsels of information, and it has been. Is there anything that you wanted to touch on that we haven't touched on yet?
Yeah, sure. So we talked about the employee fit for remote work. We talked about the leader fit for leading a remote team, the leader's capabilities. The third area that we do a lot of speaking on and work in is distributed teams. So we've developed a diagnostic for how well is the team functioning when they're working at a distance from one another. And it's like going to the doctor, right? Where you can diagnose what's going on. How well are we communicating, coordinating, collaborating, trusting one another, holding each other accountable? How strategic are we as a team? And then you're able to do something about it. So when organizations say, oh, I'm really nervous about moving into this distributed workplace, how is it going to impact our teams and our culture? We say, well, let's measure it. Let's set them up for success. 3 months into it, let's assess the teams, figure out what's going on, figure out how to tweak it and improve it. A year into it, 2 years into it, we can get to the bottom of what's going on because these teams can falter. They can struggle. And it's better to know what's going on because when you're at a distance, problems can fester that you don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that we don't touch on this podcast enough, is sort of the kind of the dark corners. You know, I think that people who may not be familiar with just distributed work, remote work, you know, have these ideas. They think everything is a dark corner. They, you know, again, that sort of idea of people just only communicating through email, that they're not really getting a feel for each other. But those of us that are in it see that it is actually, you know, much more holistic. However, if someone had an addiction problem or, you know, other issues, you know, it would be really easy for them to hide that, whereas it might not be so easy in a co-located environment. And you could, you know, be more readily able to help people. You know, that's a thing.
Yeah, I like that. And now that dark corners concept, we don't really use that, but I like, it's a good way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I mean, because you feel, I mean, to use again, to use the webcam as a metaphor here, perhaps, you know, you're seeing what you think is the person's home, and they're letting you into their home. And this is wonderful that you're able to communicate in this way, and they've cleaned up that area of the room, but the rest of the room may be a mess, and who knows what's going on there. And, you know, I do think that the people need to have their privacy, that it's you know, we're talking to some extent about crossing the line from, you know, work-life balance, what's an employer's purview, but you know, we are hiring the whole person. We need the whole person to come work for us, and ultimately I see it again as an exercise of empathy, of wanting to help people. You know, because oftentimes if people have these problems that they've been sort of brushing under the rug, they may eventually you know, explode in a way, and then they'll just, as employees, disappear, you know, not be able to sustain working anymore. So, you know, maybe I'm getting overly dramatic about it. I haven't seen too much of this, to be honest with you, but I think to some extent you know, we talked about all these traits of being a good remote employee, and some of them, are traits that are not often held by people with some of the problems that we're talking about. So, I'm hesitant to generalize here. So,
yeah, I think in some ways, if you flip it, you could say someone coming into the office every day can hide problems too, because managers get used to managing by presenteeism. So they're bums in their seats and they must be working. Whereas in a remote workplace, the manager is more forced to manage by objectives and goals. And that will unveil if the person's not getting stuff done.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. And then, you know, a more results oriented work environment, you know, where we're looking at the results, it can be much more measurable than just measuring by butts and seats.
Exactly. Yeah. So having high performing teams working together from a distance is a whole nother area of focus that I think organizations should be aware of and understanding. Teams are mini cultures. It's almost as if you're doing a mini engagement survey at the team level, because engagement surveys are really popular, right? But we don't often do them at the team level, saying, how can this team be more engaged and productive and accountable and committed? And when you're working at a distance, it's worth taking that lens and looking at what's going on rather than just leaving it to chance, is what our opinion is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all good stuff. You know, as you can measure this, as you can have those sometimes, you know, difficult conversations. Again, this planfulness, you know, you can plan out those conversations and you do them because it's the day that we have that conversation and I can't put it off any longer. But, you know, have those deep, critical conversations, and, you know, let people know how they're doing. and don't let things slide so much. So, yeah,
exactly. So lots of good conversation here. And it's such a hot topic. And I think it's not going away, which is why I love the fact that you've created so many podcasts, Jeff. And I'm planning to listen to a lot of them myself, because it's just great to hear, I guess, different ways of saying some of the same things too, right?
There ends up being some information that's repeated. And I'm sure that even a lot of the things that I say, I've probably said ankle weights for management on this podcast 20 times, but you know, new people are listening to individual podcasts, or, you know, sometimes it's, you know, people need to hear things three or four times before it kind of dawns on them. Ah, I see what that means. And even just hearing so many people saying a lot of the same things, you know, there become these trends, these things that are sort of, okay, this is true. This is obvious. This is clear. We can sort of build, our internal emotional data metrics.
Exactly. Yeah. And I like how you say it's a movement, right? It really is a movement, and a movement really takes decades, right? A movement doesn't take 2 years. It takes decades. And I mean, millennials and the topic of millennials and remote work, I think that is a hot one. And I've partnered with an expert on generations from Toronto, and we're doing an event not only on millennials, but on Generation Z as well. Z or Z if you're in Canada, Z if you're there. She started to do research across the country on Generation Z and what that looks like compared to millennials. And I think that's going to be a whole nother tipping point. It'll be just fascinating to see how they view work and workplace compared to even millennials.
That generation, I think, is growing up with different levels of openness and communication and different ways of seeing privacy, different levels of acceptance. They've been exposed to so much different kinds of stuff from both people they know and people they don't know on the internet. And that's looking at it in a positive way. There are all sorts of issues around attention and all that kind of stuff. But of course, we say that about every generation. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Laura, thank you so much. This has been great. If people want to follow up with you, get in touch, where should they?
Yeah, sure. So we have workevolution.com. Evolution has an OH because it's O'Neill and Hambly, the co-founders. People always ask that.
I thought it was because it was Epiphany. Work Ev. Oh,
Lucian. Like that. Yeah. And then the O looks like
it's got an exclamation right in the middle.
It's that, and then it's the psychology symbol, right? The O as our logo makes this psychology symbol. So that's always fun. But our handle is at Work Evolution as one word with the OH.
On Twitter, so
we're on Twitter, okay. We're on LinkedIn. We have a lot of good resources on our website. Obviously, we want to hear from you. We want to work with organizations that are interested in either the ones that are moving towards this or are already doing it. Because when you're already doing it, you need to keep doing it well, or you're going to go backwards like the IBM and Yahoo did and others. So we need to make sure you're more like Adele, that you keep moving it forwards. And we're happy to discuss. We're happy to let you try out our distributed work profiler if you think your organization's interested. That one's fully automated, so you get your results in real time with video debriefs. So it's we try to make it so it can scale into large organizations and not be too heavy in terms of the administration of the debriefs. But when it comes to leaders, it's all about debriefing leaders, coaching leaders, training leaders, and making sure they're successful. Because if they're not, the whole initiative's going to flop. So there you go. Work Evolution. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks again, Dr. Laura. We'll have to have you on a future podcast to delve deeper into some of these subjects. There's so much to dig into, and I'm sure we'll probably run into each other at a conference or South by Southwest.
That'd be amazing. Thanks, Jeff, for the great work you're doing here.
All right. Take care.